West Campus testing site extends hours. Midland Health has received funding from the city that will allow extended hours for COVID-19 testing at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus. The testing site will operate 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays. Anyone who has been exposed or is symptomatic can call 68 Nurse 686-8773 to make an appointment at the drive-through testing site. The test is free for those who are scheduled. Insurance information will be collected from those who are insured, according to the release.
For the lighter side of local news, Recording Library of West Texas brings you the Lifestyle Show. Features from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. We'll feature fun local stories about people in our community, plus columns such as gardening and food. The Lifestyle Show, Friday mornings at 6 and repeated Sunday nights at 7:30 and Thursdays at 4:30 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 82 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 70s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 90s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello, this is Betsy, and I'll be reading Entertainment Weekly this week. The following articles are from their website, EW.com. Olympia Dukakis, the dry-witted stage and screen actress who toiled under the radar for nearly 30 years before becoming a household name with her scene-stealing turn as the indomitable matriarch in the 1987 rom-com Moonstruck, has died. She was 89. Dukakis's brother Apollo announced her death on Facebook Saturday. He quoted, "My beloved sister Olympia Dukakis passed away this morning in New York City," he wrote, "and many months of failing health, she's finally at peace, and with her Louis, Dukakis's husband, Louis Zork, who died in 2018. A fiercely independent first-generation Greek-American, Dukakis paved her own way through Hollywood while also making time to engage in political activism and theater work. The daughter of Greek immigrants, Dukakis was born and raised in Massachusetts, where she would become accustomed to the casual discrimination that would follow her throughout her career. Though she wanted to act from a very young age, Dukakis studied physical therapy as an undergraduate at Boston University, which she practiced for a few years during the height of the polio epidemic. The paychecks mainly enabled her to continue pursuing a stage career before returning to BU for a graduate degree in the performing arts. From there, her path was set. Even if it would take nearly 3 decades to start getting on-screen parts worthy of her talent. It was Dukakis's role as a nutty mother in the 1986 Broadway production of Social Security that caught director Norman Jewison's attention. He casted her in Moonstruck on that performance alone. As the straight-talking Rose, Dukakis brought unforgettable verb to the world of the film, which became one of the highest-grossing and most beloved films of 1987. Dukakis, already in her mid-50s, was suddenly an Oscar-season darling. At a time when her cousin, Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis, was running for presidency, she won, he didn't. With a Best Supporting Actress Oscar in hand, she landed high-profile roles such as the personal director in 1988's Working Girl, the widow Claire in 1989's Steel Magnolias, and the hard-edged high school principal in Mr. Holland's Opus. In the TV adaptation of Armistead's Make and Tale of the City books, she memorably portrayed Anna Magrello, the pot-growing transgender landlady of 28 Barbary Lane. She also won some younger fans as Zelda, Grandpa Simpson's love interest in the now classic Simpsons episode, The Old Man and the Key. And though she didn't get any major award recognition for it, Dukakis turned in a very wonderful performance in Sarah Polley's Away From Her as an aging wife who discovers love outside of marriage as her husband deteriorates in a nursing home. More recently, she was in a documentary about Dukakis' career, Olympia, which was released in 2020, and she'd been cast as Marlene Dietrich in an upcoming Dionne Warwick biopic. Together with husband Zorik, Fiddler on the Roof, a Czechoslovakian American actor whom she married in 1962, she co-founded and ran the whole theater in Montclair, New Jersey. And from 1973 to 1992, the couple mounted 5 plays each year at the venue, drawing such stars as Colleen Dewhurst, Bly Danner, and Samuel L. Jackson. She also taught a master acting class at NYU, penned the autobiography Ask Me Again Tomorrow, A Life in Progress, and lectured regularly on everything from feminism and theater life to Alzheimer's disease. Dukakis may be known for her independent drive and unwavering sense of self, but they were born of insecurity. Growing up, I was always feeling like an outsider, she said. Being Greek in communities that were not very ethnic, I felt like an outsider in the Greek community, too, because women were expected to behave and socialize in a certain way, and I didn't do that. Also, being an actor, I felt like an outsider because not many Greek-American women were actors then. Dukakis told Broadway World in 2007, but once you realize that you are an outsider, there can be a freedom in that. You can find your own way. Or, as Rose Castorini said so memorably in Moonstruck, I know who I am. And so did Dukakis. Additional reporting is by Lindsay Bauer. Hugh Jackman shares incredibly smart career advice for Ryan Reynolds from a Deadpool fan. Hugh Jackman is trolling Ryan Reynolds once again. The X-Men star shared a bit of career advice for Reynolds from a New York City police officer and apparent Deadpool fan on Saturday. Advice which essentially amounts to giving Jackman a role in the upcoming 3rd Deadpool film. Hey, Ryan, you gotta get this guy in Deadpool 3. Officer John Dubinsky said in a video that Jackman posted on Twitter, even if it's only a 10-minute cameo, that would be awesome. That movie would be so cool, so great. It would blow the box office. Dubinsky also joked, threatening to give Reynolds a ticket if Jackson doesn't appear. Excuse me, Jackman doesn't appear. Officer Doc Mean is drolling out incredibly smart career advice for him. Jackman wrote alongside the video, sharing is caring. Jackman and Reynolds frequently rib each other online and in interviews as part of the ongoing feud. Last year, Reynolds crushed a virtual X-Men cast reunion while Jackman joked that his Emmy nomination for Bad Education might leave the Deadpool star feeling bitter. "I don't think he's going to get out of bed for 3 days," Jackman said at an Associated Press interview. Deadpool 3 is currently still in development. In November, Bob Berger's writers, Lizzie and Wendy, were taped to write, the script. The film should come in soon. It would be part of the Marvel cinematic universe after Disney's acquisition of Deadpool Studio Fox, but Marvel Studios chief Kevin has said it will retain a R rating. Should be fun. We look anxious to watching it soon. Guy Pearce shares Richard's purpose in Mar of Easttown. The actor says there is a point to his role opposite Kate Winslet in the HBO drama. He says everyone's a suspect on HBO's Mar of Easttown, including the man currently winning over Mayor Kate Winslet herself. Guy Pearce plays Richard on the HBO drama, a writer who comes to town and develops an immediate interest in the hard shell detective. EW spoke with Pierce about Richard's role in Mar's life, reuniting with his Mildred Pierce co-star Winslet, and more. Guy Pearce says, "Well, my lovely old friend Kate Winslet called me and said, 'Darling, darling, darling, I'm doing this show and you have to come and do it with me. I'm in.' You just don't say no when she says something like that. It's sort of a sense of I'm required to do it because it was quite specific and point of the role that I suppose. You mentioned the part of the role, as you put it. So what do you feel it's like in the point of Richard in this story?" Well, the thing that Kate talked about, and you can see it as you watch the show, that Kate's character, Mare, is fairly well into the small community. And by being her own person and own personal stuff, just gets kind of put aside. Richard, as an outsider, enables some of that stuff to be brought off the shelf a little bit and be sort of opened about it. The question of her being a lovable human being, her being worthy of love, of being able to love, etc., etc., etc. I think my understanding is that we've got a character in Mar who's so into it, into her work that she's doing and the family drama around her, that I think this happens for a lot of people, particularly when there's grief involved. We put our own stuff aside. Beside, that's how we survive. We get on with work. And we just move forward. We keep on pushing through because if we allow our vulnerability to sort of rise up, we simply fall apart. And that's made it more difficult when you're in town where everyone knows everybody. Right. Being in the world for her essentially means that everybody's personal lives are too intertwined for anybody in that community to change things for her. She's too cynical by the point to believe that anything that anyone would say to her from within that town, that would make her go, "Oh, what, me? I'm lovable. I'm very lovable." Whereas an outsider, there's no denying that he doesn't know as much as she resists it. I think it's a prerequisite that he is an outsider. He's got his own story as well and his own slightly wobbly history with women. He had a bigger fame, and so he's probably had a bunch of meaningless sex and things that have gone nowhere. But he is a decent guy, but he's a bit slightly confused about his own personal needs. The next question was, the thing I enjoy is that it feels like he brings out a different side of her that we otherwise wouldn't get to see. There's something genuine about him seeing her and going, "You're interesting, and I'd like to get to know you more," comes out in his character. He manages to sort of crack something open a little bit that she probably doesn't even know that she needs at that point. Or she knows, but she's just not ready for it. So it takes a bit of work, and they are both excellent in what they do. I think his role is quite an integral part in her growth. Her dates with Richard almost feel therapeutic in the show because, like you said, especially in a small town, she not only knows everyone, but she's probably dated everyone she's ever wanted to date already, too. Yeah, that's right. So where do you go from here? I'm sure she's going, "Okay, I'm closing the door on a relationship in this town because, as you say, dated everybody or everyone knows too much information or it's just too complicated now." I think it's important, that idea. I mean, even people who are in their 70s and 80s who meet each other and have a bit of a spark with each other, there's something in that spark that's similar to 16-year-olds who meet each other. There's something about not knowing each other. The next question was, there are lines in the show about how she does not talk about her life to her immediate family. She doesn't talk. So when it's a someone new, it forces her to talk. Yeah, she's a bit like a blonk in a way, in that typical cliche way that men don't talk about stuff. I mean, Kate, she's just brilliant. She's so brilliant. I think the gender topic and the idea that she probably has taken on a bit of a male sort of personality is very interesting in the show. I struggle with this a bit, where often I mean it's a slightly different subject. But you see politicians, for example, or women in business where they're perhaps only taken seriously if they act like men. You go. But is it a male thing to be bossy and arrogant and horrible? Is that a male thing? It certainly seems like it. And is that the only way that women can actually can progress? But I also think that maybe it just is a male thing, but it's more of a default position for men to do. Oh, just don't want to talk about stuff. But Mare has done that a bit just for herself. Preservation. Mayor of Easttown airs Sundays at 10 p.m. ET on HBO. Sounds like it's a wonderful, wonderful show. We'll look forward to watching her and to see how she grows. Oscar winner Anthony Hopkins pays tribute to Chadwick Boseman in an acceptance speech video. Anthony Hopkins has paid tribute to the late Chadwick Boseman in the course of his acceptance speech after winning Best Actor Award at Sunday's Oscars. Hopkins won the trophy for his role in the film The Father. Boseman, who was also nominated in the Best Actor category for his performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, passed away last August, 4 years after being diagnosed with colon cancer. Hopkins wasn't in attendance at the ceremony, so last year's winner, Mr. Phoenix, who presented the category, accepted the award on his behalf. "Good morning," said Hopkins in a video which he released on Monday morning. "Well, here I am in my homeland in Wales, and at 83 years of age, I did not expect to get this award. I really didn't. And I'm very, very grateful to the Academy, and thank you. And I want to pay tribute to Chadwick Boseman, who was taken from us far too early. And again, thank you all very much. I really did not expect this, so I feel very privileged and honored. Thank you." Hopkins' rousing turn as a patriarch with dementia was pegged as a shoe-in for a nomination in the Best Actor category for over a year. However, his Academy Award win is considered an upset for many due to the fact that he bested the late Boseman up for his final show-stopping role as Levy in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Hopkins' win makes the 83-year-old the oldest person to ever receive an acting Oscar. He previously won the Best Actor Award for his performance as Dr. Hannibal Lecter in 1991's Silence of the Lambs. Well, that was a long time ago, and we are so happy that he has won, but yet how kind that he has paid tribute to a wonderful, wonderful man, Chadwick Boseman. Thank you so much. Dina Cortese is officially a mom of two. The Jersey Shore star 34 welcomed her second son, Cameron Theo, on Saturday, she announced the next day. The newborn, who Cortese welcomed with her husband, Chris Bunkner, arrived at 7:21 p.m., weighing 7 pounds, 3 ounces, and 20 inches long. The Buckners are now officially a party of four. Cameron Theo Buckner was born May the 1st at 7:21, weighing 7 pounds, 3 ounces, and 20 inches long, the MTV star wrote. He is such a little angel baby. Mommy is feeling well, and we are so happy, and we're bursting out with so much love. Our hearts are full. We can't wait until he meets his big brother tomorrow. Well, we want to wish them all the best. And prior to Cameron's birth, Cortese also shares 2-year-old son, CJ, with Buckner, reflecting on her amazing pregnancy with her baby boy. I have to say that I had very, very little problems. And even though I feel like this last month was dragging, most because I'm in pain and uncomfortable, it truly flew by. Definitely having a whirlwind of emotions, happiness, excitement, so much love, she wrote. Cortese also shared her excitement for her two sons to become the best of friends. CJ is going to be the best big brother ever to baby Cammy. We can't wait until Cameron decides to make his debut BC. We are all so ready to have him here, she gushed. In December, Cortese revealed that she and her husband would be naming their second son Cameron. Cortese first found out that she would be continuing her journey as a boy mom in October when she and Buckner held a Halloween theme party to reveal the sex of their second child. Looks like CJ's getting a little brother. Oh, we are so excited to announce that we're expecting baby Buckner number 2, May 1st, 2021. Our hearts are filled with so much love and joy. CJ is going to be the best big brother ever. Yes, yes, we are so excited, Buckner sweetly wrote in her comments. Thank you so much for sharing in our happiness. Bridgerton has begun shooting its highly anticipated season 2 with both Jonathan Bailey and newcomer Simone Ashley spotted dressed to the nines at the Ascot Racecourse on April 30th. The new photos arrive after the highly controversial announcement that Reggie Jean Page would not continue to portray the Duke of Hastings on the hit Netflix series Sophomore Turn. It will instead focus on Bailey's Anthony Bridgerton and his new love interest, Kate Sharman Ashley, inspired by Julia Quinn's novel, The Viscount Who Loved Me. Ashley joined the Brickerton cast in mid-February, and her character, Kate, who was newly arrived in London, is described as a smart, headstrong young woman who suffers no fools, Anthony Brickerton very much included. The series has proven to be very popular. The streamer has renewed it through season 4. Gossipy Lady Whistledown, voiced by Julie Andrews in the series, shared the news herself last month. "It seems we have a rather special announcement," she writes. "Brickerton shall return for seasons 3 and 4. The author shall have to purchase more ink." Sorry, dear writers. It is as yet uncertain when season 2 will have its grand entrance for all to enjoy. But get ready to watch it on Netflix. We'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist choreographer Mandy Moore talks directing her first episode. When Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist Emmy-winning choreographer Mandy Moore stepped in to direct her very first episode, she really swung for the fences. With multiple large group dance numbers, including the show's biggest one yet, with over 200 performers, Moore's directorial debut was so big she found herself quoting moments from the script while talking in her sleep. There's a scene between Tobin and Mackenzie in this episode, and there's a line where she goes, "I hate him." And then he says, "I hate him too." And right before we shot that scene, like 3 or 4 days before, I said this in my sleep, Moore tells EW with a laugh, "I forgot that I was in the episode, and I was like, oh my gosh, who do I hate?" It took a couple days for Moore to find out that she was just quoting the show and that she hasn't stopped laughing about it ever since. EW got Moore to discuss directing for the very first time and what fans can expect from her first episode that airs on Saturday. Mandy Moore says, "Because I've been with the show since day one in such an integral part alongside showrunner Austin Winsberg, and who's ever directing, funny enough, I never felt like my brain like, I must direct. But I really, really wanted to. I was first completely honored, and then second I was like, yes, yes, let's do this. This is the right time." It was kind of a weird synergy thing. It all happened for a good reason. The next question was, "How did you approach directing this episode?" Mandy said, "Basically, I was just like, I need to turn it up a notch. I've already worked 14 hours a day creating everything dance-wise for the show." I know that's a lot. "When moving from choreography to directing with choreography, I'm thinking about a certain scene that maybe is a minute and a half in length, and I'm thinking very much along the same lines as a director when I'm creating those. But when you direct, you're obviously thinking of 42 minutes. The workload just expands. And once I realized that so much of my skills is set as a choreographer, I was in line with what I would have to do as a director. It didn't seem as overwhelming. The way you block a dance is very similar to the way that you block a scene. It's all in tempo and timing and emotion and narrative and feel. It was nice that it transitioned pretty well." Next question was, "If it does feel like the choreographer, you've already directing so much in every episode, so it makes sense you would be able to take over as director so smoothly." She answered, "Yeah, a lot of people say choreographers make for great directors. And now being through the process, I can understand the correlation. It's very similar. You're physically something on that page, and it's what you do as a director. You try to visually represent what you read on the page, working so closely with Austin. He and I are two peas in a pod, anyway. So it's really nice to feel like he trusts my vision. He and I are really honest with one another. We keep each other in check with things, and it's just so nice to feel like I was in the right place doing the right stuff. And as you can see, we have so many dance numbers in this episode, which felt right for the episode that you directed. There's a scene in which Zoe, Jane Levy, sees the bay to breakers. Crowds of runners perform a heart song. It's the biggest dance sequence you've done on the show so far. She responded, yes. And Austin thought it was so funny when he came up with it. He's like, yes, I'm really going to challenge you on this one. Then there was a laugh. It was a massive challenge. But honestly, I feel really at home with lots of the bodies in the space. The hardest thing, obviously, was getting everyone tested and in the correct protocol for all of this coronavirus stuff and organizing the location and figuring out the VFX. And when it came down to actually having that many bodies in a space, I really felt at home because that's what I get to do a lot as a choreographer. The next question was, it would have been amazing if you pulled that off under normal circumstances, let alone the coronavirus. Yeah, it was great. It really goes to show how well production works together and creates symptoms. We had wonderful systems in place and people that were able to make that all happen, and everyone was safe. It was 40 to 50 dancers, but then we had 150 extras or background and then our cast on top of that. It was just so wonderful. We had so many meetings about how we were going to logistically make that happen, because even with the coronavirus, to move that amount of bodies through space in a television time frame where you've got 3 hours or 4 hours to shoot the entire thing, is just moving that many bodies around can be difficult. So my hats are off to everyone for making that happen. We worked really hard on that. And tell me about the scene in the episode in which Max performs a heart song. Was that done in one take? Yes, it was. Skylar really nailed it that night. It was late at night. We shot many, many hours prior to shooting that. And he, along with our steady cam operator, Bradley Crosby, who is just a superhuman, they did it in 4 takes. It was really, really well done. With the Bay to Breakers crowd dance and Skylar's 1 take number, it feels like you really shot for the sky with your directorial debut. Did you plan on doing all this wild, difficult scenes just to see what you could pull off? Honestly, for me, it was kind of a psycho in that I just felt like I cannot fail. Like, I have to come out swimming because I have the ability. I've been here since day one. I know the show inside and out, and it's really a great script as well, so I'm very thankful for that. I just really tried to push the envelope with some things. I thought, I have nothing to lose, right? You're given an opportunity to direct for the first time, and I'm a big believer in go big and go home, and you can learn so much from taking those big swings. I might fail really, really big, but at least I tried. And luckily, it paid off. And it's not like I'm a first-time director coming into the show. I don't know. I had a really big support system, too, and this massive family to help me through all of it. We will look forward to seeing it. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist airs Sundays at 9 p.m. ETPT on NBC. What a phenomenal show we will get to watch. Can't wait. Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck have been hanging out together in Los Angeles after their singer's recent split from Alex. Affleck, 48, visited Lopez, 51, at her L.A. home on Friday, a source tells People. A separate source who knows them both very well tells people they're friends. They've always been friends, and they will see each other through the years. Affleck was also photographed leaving a white SUV that allegedly belongs to Lopez, according to Page Six. The Gone Girl actor wore a t-shirt, jeans, and was photographed holding a military green backpack as he exited the car. Alex and Lopez released a joint statement on April 15th, announcing the end of their engagement after 4 years together. Multiple sources confirmed to People that it was the singer who ultimately broke up the retired baseball player. Affleck and Lopez were engaged in 2002 and made headlines as Bennifer during their years together, even co-starring in films Jersey Girl and Geegly. They postponed their 2003 wedding days before they were set to walk down the aisle and then officially split by January 2004. Despite going their separate ways, the two have remained friendly with Affleck, commenting on Lopez's glow in an interview with In Style when the Love Don't Cost a Thing singer grazed the cover on May Beauty issue. The Oscar winner opened up about Lopez, the magazine, saying, "Where are you keeping the Fountain of Youth? What, you look the same as you did in 2003, and it kind of looks like I'm in my 40s at the best." In response, Lopez told the magazine, "I don't have any beauty secrets except J-Lo Beauty, and I'm giving them all to everyone with every single product." Ben is so funny. He still looks pretty good, too. In January, Affleck reflected on his prior romance with Hustler star, saying on the Hollywood Reporter's Awards Chatter podcast that much of the media attention on their relationship was negative towards Lopez. "People were so mean and sexist and racist, ugly and vicious. They were riding her in ways that you wrote somebody that you literally did not like and saying things like Affleck said during the podcast. Now it's like she's respected for her work that she did and when she came back, what she has accomplished. I would say you have a better shot coming from the Bronx of ending up as like Justice Sonia on the Supreme Court than you do having Jennifer Lopez's career and being who she is at 50 years old today," he added. "She's a pretty amazing person." This story originally appeared on People.com. NSYNC star Lance Bass proves he still got moves in It's Gonna Be May challenge. Well, it's gonna be May tomorrow in honor of April the 30th, a day celebrating the art of movement. Lance Bass is kicking off the NSYNC, It's Gonna Be May tradition, by helping fans get ready for the big day. Bass shared a video on TikTok, one that bounds to go viral, I'm sure, showing him easily re-performing the moves from the NSYNC's It's Gonna Be Me video with himself times two. The star also asked fans to learn the moves or brush up on them. Who are we joking? We know them by heart. But join in on May the 1st. It's National Dance Day, so I'm gonna need all of you to debut it and to help me dance. Well, for years, pictures of NSYNC's Justin Timberlake and video clips from the group's music video for the hit song have been recycled on social media in the run-up to and during the month of May. Social users jumped on the trend for the way Timberlake said the word "me" in the video, since it sounds like he was saying "May." But that's just part of his accent. Anyway, we hope you enjoy watching it. Thank you. Get a new look at the shocking tragedy of the Hart family. It seemed like they were really happy. See the exclusive first look at a documentary about the incident, Broken Hearts, which is debuting on Discovery May 18th. What really happened to the Hart family? A new Discovery feature documentary is attempting to answer just that. In the trailer for the new documentary, Broken Hearts, which EW is premiering exclusively for those who knew the family and experts familiar with the case, share their thoughts. How could we be so close to something so awful and not even know? A voiceover says in the clips. It seemed like they were so happy, another person adds. Broken Hearts, which expands upon the Glamour podcast, an article of the same name, follows the tragic story of Jen and Sarah Hart and their children on March 26, 2018, on a coastal section part of Highway 1 in California. A car was found upside down at the bottom of a 100-foot cliff. Inside, police found the bodies of Jen and Sarah and three of their six children. The bodies of the two others were found later, and another has never been found but is presumed dead. From the very onset, experts said it seemed more than a normal traffic accident. It continued to be very confusing and a shocking story, both for the local community and the online supporters who have followed the family's adventures for years. The official synopsis reads, "The two-hour film peels back the facade this family carefully exposed, chilling patterns of abuse and multiple systems that failed to protect the lives of six innocent children." Broken Hearts will be available to stream exclusively on Discovery Plus starting May 18th. We'll look forward to watching it. And what a sad story it is. Lady Gaga suspected God nappers arrested, including woman who returned pups to police. Let's listen. Five suspects have been arrested in connection to Lady Gaga's dog napping incident that left her dog walker, Ryan Fisher, seriously injured with a gunshot wound to the chest in February. They confirmed on EW. A law enforcement representative reported that James Jackson, 18, Jalen White, 19, and Lafayette Watley, 27, were arrested on April 27th for the alleged involvement in the robbery and shooting and are facing robbery and attempted murder charges. It is believed the singer wasn't targeted. Instead, the motivation behind the theft was the value of the French bulldog breed, which are often stolen and resold. The trio is described by law enforcement as gang members from Los Angeles. Others who were allegedly also involved in taking into police custody are Harold White, 40, and Jennifer McBride, both of whom are charged with being an accessory to the attempted murder after the original crime. McBride brought the dogs to the Olympic Station 2 days after the crime, claiming she had found them. Well, originally, the woman who returned the dogs appeared to be uninvolved and unassociated with the robbery. Gaga offered a $500,000 reward for the safe return of her beloved pups. It is unclear if McBride was initially given any reward money. Fisher, who is still recovering from his injuries, was approached by two people while walking the dogs at night in Hollywood on February 24th. He was shot, and two of the three dogs were stolen. The singer was in Rome during the violent incident filming Ridley Scott's upcoming Gucci murder drama. Lady Gaga says her heart is sick over her stolen dogs and what happened. Josh makes plans to move on in the exclusive Younger mid-season trailer. As the Paramount comes to a close, will Liza end up with Charles, Josh, or neither. So with only 6 episodes to go, where is it all going to end? Will Liza find professional and personal fulfillment after years of sneaking around and pretending to be someone she really isn't? From the looks of the mid-season trailer and a wild twist, Charles' ex-wife, Pauline, is about to get involved to help get her ex back with Liza. While Josh seems to be planning on leaving town as he tells Kelsey, he's moving out of her apartment. What will the final chapter bring? You'll have to tune in to find out as new episodes drop weekly on Thursdays on Paramount and Hulu. We will have to wait and see. Well, my friends, that's about all for now. I want to wish everyone just to have a great week. It's going to be a very wet week, but I know spring is right around the corner. Have fun continuing to watch all of your shows and learn about all of the stars, and we will look forward to talking to you again next week. This has been Betsy with EW. Have a great week. Thank you.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Aphasia Center of West Texas has scheduled a tribute to the legendary Queen and Freddie Mercury. Live and virtual options, May 7th.
She's a killer queen, got that identity.
The Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Scholarship is available. To sponsor, make a reservation, or for more information, call 432-699-1261. Or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert. Call 432-699-1261 or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert.
For 10 weeks, Recording Library of West Texas Radio has presented movies from the past 90 years that won the Academy Award for Best Picture. Some of the finest dramas and performances ever put onto the screen. Now, Recording Library of West Texas Radio is bringing you one of the most acclaimed movies of all time.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Airplane!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
What kind of plane is it?
Oh, it's a big, pretty white plane with red stripes and curtains in the window and wheels, and it looks like a big Tylenol.
Stand by for the most extraordinary chain of events ever swept up into high adventure.
I got a telegram from headquarters today.
Headquarters? What is it?
Well, it's a big building where generals meet. But that's not important right now.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Airplane is drama.
I want the best available man in this. The man who knows that plane inside and out. It won't crack under pressure.
How about Mr. Rogers?
I think I will have another cup of coffee.
Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Airplane is action.
Stryker, that plane can't land itself. It takes a pilot who can handle pressure.
He's off, Rex. He hasn't flown for years. It's not his fault. It could happen to any pilot.
It happened to Barbara Stanwyck.
This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now.
Airplane is romance.
Excuse me. I happened to be passing, and I thought you might like some coffee.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you.
Well, won't you sit down?
Thank you.
Cream?
No, thank you. I take it black. Like my man.
Never has the screen been so big.
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh?
Flight 209er clear for Vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Peter Graves.
Joey, you like movies about gladiators?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
Leslie Nielsen.
What was it we had for dinner tonight?
Well, we had a choice, steak, fish.
Yes, yes, I remember I had lasagna.
Lloyd Bridges.
Picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
Robert Stack.
All right, I'll need three men up in the tower.
The tower? Rapunzel! Rapunzel!
Julie Haggerty.
By the way, is there anyone on board who knows how to fly a plane?
The most incredible adventure the screen has ever created.
Passengers certain to die. Airline negligent.
There's a sale at Penny's.
Joey, have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Johnny, what can you make out of this?
This? Well, I could make a cap, or a brooch, a pterodactyl.
The big news is... Airplane.
While many of the gags are sight-driven, Airplane will be fully audio-described. So get ready for some laughs this weekend with Airplane, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
Treatment needed for pain in hands. Dear Dr. Roach, I would like to know how to treat arthritis. I have been using Voltaren per my doctor's orders, but it does not seem to be helping much. I have also been taking ibuprofen, but I am afraid of stomach bleeding. The arthritis is in my wrists and thumb. I can hardly open a doorknob or lift any small objects. Does turmeric help? I would appreciate any advice you can give me. It is hard to do any cooking or housework using my hands. They ache and throb all day. MV. Answer. There are several different types of arthritis of the hand, and it sounds as though your doctor has made the diagnosis of osteoarthritis, which is the most common type. Rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis are inflammatory varieties that require very different therapies. Blood testing and x-rays help separate the different types of arthritis from one another if your history and physical exam indicate the need. If you have osteoarthritis, oral anti-inflammatory medicines like Voltaren or ibuprofen, but never both, taking two different NSAIDs orally adds only toxicity, not effectiveness, are common and often effective treatments. Voltaren is also available as a gel, and it's okay to use both Voltaren gel and a different oral NSAID, such as ibuprofen. The gel is poorly absorbed into the body and is very unlikely to have systemic side effects. However, remember that exercise improves pain and function. One set of exercises specifically for hand arthritis from the Mayo Clinic can be found at tinyurl.com/mayo-hand. That's tinyurl.com/mayo-hand. You asked about turmeric. There are studies showing benefit for turmeric, and it has little toxicity, so I think it is worth a try. Similarly, Boswellia supplements have shown benefit in some people with osteoarthritis. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536, 475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Every now and then, when the world steps in, stealing all our time away, it soon takes so much, we forget to touch. That's when I know it's time for me to say, take my hand, let's walk through love's door and be free from the world once more. Here's my arms, we can hide today and love the world away. Once again, we'll be where our hearts are free, and the time is ours to share. Love will always stay, just a touch away. Come with me, all the magic's waiting there. Take my hand, let's walk through love's door and be free from the world once more. Here's my heart, we can hide today and love the world.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Highland United Methodist Church, 1808 North Dixie, and volunteers offer a backdoor blessing meal at 6 p.m. Wednesdays in the Fellowship Hall. There is no charge. Any donations contributed go toward Highland's Children's Ministries. Call 332-0261 or email highlandumc.odessa@gmail.com. or visit highlandodessa.com.
Each week, Dale and co-host Cheryl Cummings bring you new recipes and cooking tips, specifically for those who have low vision or no vision on cooking in the dark.
Oil is really hard to measure. I've got some measuring spoons on a ring here, and what I did was I just poured the olive oil in. I kind of held my thumb over the edge of it, and when I felt it kind of start to run over the side, I dumped it and then poured and filled it up again and dumped again.
A few months ago, everybody was trying to be healthy, and there was a ban. You couldn't bring in any candy.
That's usually good for like the first 2 weeks of the new year, you know, and then after that, it's out the window, man.
Yeah.
I've even made this before where I've used two packages of the dry ranch dip mix.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when somebody finds out you're blind? They talk louder. We even had a guy one time came up to Candace and I and told us we need to learn sign language because I was blind. I'm like, really?
Wednesdays at 8, Sundays at noon, and Mondays at midnight.
Cooking in the dark.
Cooking in the dark.
On Recording Library of West Texas Radio.